शाम शूद्र पदाहताम विवत्साम आश्रुवदनाम श्यामाम यवसमिच्छति गाम च धर्म दुग्धं दीनाम भृशं शूद्र पदाहताम विवत्सामाश्रुवदनाम श्यामाम यवसमिच्छति गाम च धर्म दुग्धां दीनां भृशां शूद्र पदाहताम विवत्साम आश्रुवदनाम श्यामाम यवसमिच्छति Vaishnavis. Word for word translations. Gam, the cow. Cha, also. Dharma dugham. Beneficial because one can draw religion from her. Oh, it's not visible. Okay. Dinam, now rendered poor. Bhrusham, distressed. Shudra, a lower caste. Pada ahatam, beaten on the legs. Vivatsam, without any calf. Ashruvadanam, with tears in her eyes. Shamam, very weak. Yavasam, grass. Ichchatim, as if desiring to have some grass to eat. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta, Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation, although the cow is beneficial because one can draw religious principles from her, she was now rendered poor and calfless. Her legs were being beaten by a shudra. There were tears in her eyes and she was distressed and weak. She was hankering after some grass in the field. Purport. The next symptom of the age of Kali is the distressed condition of the cow. Milking the cow means drawing the principles of religion in liquid form. The great rishis and munis would live only on milk. Shri Shukadeva Goswami would go to a householder where he was milking a cow, and he would simply take a little quantity of it for subsistence. Even 50 years ago, no one would deprive a sadhu of a quart or two of milk, and every householder would give milk like water. For a Sanatanist, a follower of Vedic principles, it is the duty of every householder to have cows and bulls as household paraphernalia, not only for drinking milk but also for deriving religious principles. The Sanatanist worships cows on religious principles and respects Brahmanas. The cow's milk is required for the sacrificial fire, and by performing sacrifices, the householder can be happy. The cow's calf not only is beautiful to look at, but also gives satisfaction to the cow. And so, she delivers as much milk as possible. But in the Kali Yuga, the cows are separated from the cow as early as possible for purposes which may not be mentioned in these pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. The cow stands with tears in her eyes. The Shudra milkman draws milk from the cow artificially, and when there is no milk, the cow is sent to be slaughtered. These greatly sinful acts are responsible for all the troubles in present society. People do not know what they are doing in the name of economic development. The influence of Kali will keep them in the darkness of ignorance. Despite all endeavors for peace and prosperity, they must try to see the cows and the bulls happy in all respects. Foolish people do not know how one earns happiness by making the cows and bulls happy. But it is a fact by the law of nature. Let us take it from the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam and adopt the principles for the total happiness of humanity. Om Ajnanat Mirandhasya Jnananjani Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatyadeshatarine Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindhubhya evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So today morning, one of the most heart-wrenching or distressing sections in the Bhagavatam of the Srimad Bhagavatam for the devotee is going on over here. We are in the 17th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The first canto has 19 chapters. And we will see that basically here we are coming towards the description of the glories of Parikshit Maharaj, especially in how he confronted Kali. This is the 17th chapter. The whole purpose of the first canto, in one sense, is to set the scene. It is to describe how the Bhagavatam was narrated. And suppose we are told, you know, here there is a discussion between two people. Would you like to hear it? Really? Nowadays, podcasts are there where two people discuss. So when we want to hear, okay, who is the person who is, who are the people among whom the discussion is happening? We want to know that before we decide to invest our time in the discussion. So in the Bhagavatam, the glory of the student is established in the first canto. The glory of the speaker will come out eventually when the speaker starts speaking. But from chapters 7 till 19, actually, essentially the backstory of Parikshit Maharaj is given. The backstory means what happened in his life before. How did he come to the level of hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam? That is what is described. And when that is described, the purpose of this is to illustrate how great a person was hearing this discussion. Therefore, we may be inspired to hear it. So, here, how Parikshit Maharaj confronted Kali, that is described. So, in general, when the glory of some incident is to be described, if you want to describe how powerful, say, if there is a movie which wants to describe how powerful a hero is. So, to describe how powerful the hero is, quite often, what is required is describe how deadly the villain is. How dark and degraded and deadly the villain is. And when that is described, then when the hero comes to the rescue, then we start appreciating, oh, This is something special. So here, chapters 16 and 17 especially, they are describing how Kali is a dark, deadly person. And what is the reason for describing this? So that Parikshit Maharaj's great strength in curbing such a Kali will now be subsequently described. So in this section, what is described is how Kali is brutally assaulting a cow and a bull. And that is very painful. Prabhupada indicate that pain by saying that when the calf is separated from the cow, for purposes that we will not describe in the Srimad Bhagavatam. That purpose, of course, is slaughtering a calf. And Prabhupada doesn't want to mention it over here. So he says, for purposes, we don't want to spoil the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam with that. So this is the setting in which Parikshit Maharaj's glory is going to be described. So today, I will... In the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains how the cow is the source of religious principle, dharma dugham, and how we need to protect the cow. How it was very common in the past, as he says, every householder would have a cow and a bull, and they would take care of it, not just for milk, but also for dharma, for dugdha and dharma, both. So, this was the traditional understanding of cow care. Two purposes was, there is a practical financial utilitarian purpose. That is, it provided milk. But just by taking care of cows, one would develop virtue. One would actually grow in one's morality and spirituality. So these two were important. Now we will discuss today broadly on this topic with this background. The topic I'll discuss is explaining cow culture, explaining cow care to the contemporary world. Because the problem is that whenever we try to explain anything traditional in the contemporary world, explaining cow care in the contemporary world. Contemporary means in the world that exists today. Why is it such a challenge? It's a challenge because most people who have grown up today, they have no idea that, okay, in the past everybody would have cows in their houses. And even if we study about history, we study mostly about the invasions and the independence struggle, not so much about cow care. So how do we go about explaining this? I'll talk about four broad points, which will be the overall summary of the class. I'll talk first about how the need to go beyond, we need to go beyond condemnation to comprehension. Oh, modern culture is so terrible, they're killing cows and doing this and doing that. That's okay, that is true. But we need to go beyond condemnation to comprehension. Why is this happening? What are people thinking today when they are doing this? If you don't understand this, then you will simply be condemning and not really connecting with people, not really helping anyone. And second point I'll discuss is, where cow care harmonizes with contemporary culture. So what we are doing today can be explained. And third will be where it goes against. Goes against. Where cow culture goes against, cow care goes against contemporary culture. And the last point I'll discuss is basically explaining effectively what is required for that in today's world. So, it's very easy. So the first point I mentioned is, it's very easy to go to condemn. Oh, people are so degraded today. Society is so degraded today. And yes, there is, that can be done, but it's not It's helpful to a limited degree. To understand this, let's try to understand the point of communication. See, broadly speaking, we can say when we are a part of a spiritual movement, when we are a part of a tradition, then there are two broad categories of people. There are insiders. Insiders are those who are practicing bhakti. And then there are outsiders. So outsiders are those who are not practicing bhakti, who are not interested in practicing bhakti, who may not even have any knowledge of bhakti. Now we could say that, let's put it this way. So when you talk about communication, there can be four modalities of communication. One will be insider-insider. So insider-insider communication means that this is, for example, the Bhagavatam class that is going on right now. This is primarily those who are practicing bhakti, they are sharing the bhakti wisdom with others. Then there is insider-outsider kind of communication. This is what we can call as outreach. So we may go to devotees' homes, they may call their friends, and they may call their relatives, and there can be some kind of programs like that. Then, now these two are what are happening quite well in our movement. But there are two more modes of communication. There is outsider-outsider communication. This is largely what determines our public perception or our reputation. What do I mean by this? Say, for example, if somebody comes to Mumbai, say some visitor comes to Mumbai and they want to know, go to the various places in Mumbai. And they hear that, oh, in one of the beautiful places in Mumbai is the ISKCON temple. Then they will ask people, hey, you know, should I go to ISKCON temple? And what they will ask their friends, they will ask their tour guides, they will ask their relatives. And what do people say at that time? Oh, some of those people are very pushy. They'll force you to chant. They'll ask you to do this. They'll ask you to do that. And if the people see this, they say, I'll not go. So in the West, at least in India, we are, Krishna consciousness is a part of the lived culture. In the West, it is not. At least now, the last 15, 20 years, because of the spread of Krishna consciousness, at least something is known about Krishna. But about 15 years ago, there was a book written about 50 ridiculous things you have heard. There's something like that title. And about 7% of the people, they said, the most ridiculous thing I have heard in my life is a Hare Krishna person coming to me and telling me that a bluish black boy is God. They said, this is the most ridiculous thing. That was their idea. So they have no idea. So in the West, when somebody sees us distributing books or giving or dancing on the streets, what are they going to do? They'll probably Google us. They'll go to Wikipedia. And we may say, oh, Wikipedia is all written by mundane scholars or mundane people. We don't care. Well, we may not care, but that's how people's perceptions are going to be shaped. So this is something which is quite important if we want to reach out to people who are not yet ready to become insiders. Generally, when there is insider-outsider communication, the purpose of this at one level, the purpose of this communication is to bring them over here. That when we do outreach, the purpose is to help them become devotees. But there will be many people who are inquisitive, but they may not want to become devotees. How are they going to perceive us? And for that purpose, at least for some people, this outsider to insider communication is also important. What this means is, this is what brings social awareness. What are people thinking today? What are the issues in people's minds? Why do they think the way they do? So to the extent we understand this, to that extent we can actually connect with contemporary people. Otherwise, what is going to happen is, we can say, among the outsiders, see if there is a large number of people who are outsiders. Now, among these, a small number of people may be interested in becoming insiders. and our communication will reach to them. But those who are not interested in becoming insiders, if we are simply condemning them, today people eat cow flesh and people kill our otters and they don't have any understanding. I say, what world are you living in? What are you talking about? It's like, if I am condemned for values that I don't even know about, what is going to happen by that is alienation. Alienation means we will have some outsiders who will be coming here and a large number of outsiders will be going away. So this is the typical characteristic of a cult. A cult is where there is a rigid and radical differentiation between insiders and outsiders. Oh, we are good, they are all bad. We are wise, they are foolish. We are virtuous, they are vicious. Now, this is not our philosophy. Our philosophy, there are three modes of material nature. And different people are in different modes. So the point is that if we want to reach out to people to some extent, so I talked about this communication, insider-outsider communication, if you want to do it effectively, insider-outsider. So sometimes the insider will have to position oneself like an outsider. That means, okay, why do people think like this? What is the language that they use? So, when we do this, then we will be able to actually connect with people. And in this purport itself, there is an example of this. It is not that an insider becomes an outsider. We don't want that. It's not that a devotee stops practicing bhakti. Rather, a devotee understands. Why do people think the way they think? Why do the people act the way they act? So in this purport, Srila Prabhupada has used a word, Sanatanist. Now this is not a common word that Prabhupada uses. Sanatanist. So basically this is like an improvised word Prabhupada has created, a follower of Sanatan Dharma. It's interesting, Prabhupada uses it in the first canto. After that, he practically doesn't use it in later cantos. It's very rare to see Srila Prabhupada using it. Prabhupada has used it in some of his Back to Godhead magazines, articles also, which he published before 1944. Now, why is that? Because social awareness. To the Western mind, this sounds very similar to a very negative word, and it is Satanist. What is a Satanist? Is a worshipper of the Satan. Satan or Shaitan is the opposite of God, is the embodiment of evil. And as a reaction to extreme radical Christianity, you people worship God, we are the opposite of you. So not only we become atheists, we worship the person who is the opposite of God. So there is a large cult of Satanists, more than several million people are a part of this. So when Prabhupada became aware that, oh, this word sounds like that, Prabhupada stopped using it. This is social awareness. Like I use the word cult. Prabhupada used the word cult quite often in his books, but we don't use it now. Because at that time, cult simply referred to a group. When Srila Prabhupada learned his English in 1930s. But by 1960s, there was a lot of, especially in America, there was a lot of apprehension about cults brainwashing people and indoctrinating them and completely cutting people away from the world. And when that word got a negative connotation, now we as a movement have more or less retired that word's usage from our vocabulary. So that's social awareness. So this is the first point. So similarly, with respect to cow care, we live in a world today where cow care is often seem like a Hindu religious idiosyncrasy. It's sometimes these strange Hindu people do. In fact, I'm now moving to the second point. The first point was, if we want to actually connect with people, connection requires that we stop condemnation and start comprehension. Condemnation means insiders are saying how terrible the outsiders are. Comprehension is, okay, why are these people like this? We try to understand that. So, now the second point I discuss is where the cow care, it harmonizes with contemporary values. That's the first point. Now to understand this, when we go to the point two, the key thing to understand here is that
even in the what we call as the world today.
Mm-hmm.
See, there are different phases in the history of the world. So we can say there was pre-modern, and from pre-modern, people moved towards modern. And now, to a large extent, much of India is in this stage now. We are moving towards modernization. So modernization means there is urbanization, there is industrialization. There is, of course, now most of the world has gone beyond industrialization per se. We have the information technology. But beyond the modern is what is called as postmodern. So I won't go into the specific ages too much. So in pre-modern times, people focused primarily on religion. Religion as their source of authority. That means, oh, if the Vedas say this, this is right. If the Bible says this, this is to be accepted. Like that. In the modern times, people focused on science. Is it scientific? If it is scientific, I'll accept it. If it's not, I won't accept it. So this is the source of authority. Now, in the postmodern times, the primary source of authority is experience. How does this feel for me? How does this affect me? And much of the Western world, if you say I am modern, people say, oh, which stone age are you living in? Modernity was several decades ago. We have gone far beyond modern. So the Western world is largely gone towards the postmodern ethos. So, now why are we discussing this? See, in today's world, many Indians, whether we grow up in traditional families where people are still vegetarian, and then when they grow up, they think, I want to become cool, I want to become modern. And therefore, in this sense, what happens is, if you consider pre, then modern, and postmodern. So pre-modern, postmodern, modern. So what happens is, here, people often go from veg to non-veg. They think it is cool to eat meat. I'm becoming modern, I'm becoming fashionable, I'm giving up old-fashioned taboos. But in the West, actually, when people are going from modern to postmodern, they are becoming vegetarian. More specifically, they are becoming vegan in large numbers. And in the Western world, actually to abstain from meat, they say, I don't want cruelty-free food. They use the word karma-free food or cruelty-free food. And they think, so this was considered cool. But now this is considered cool, this particular journey. So what has happened is social values change. Now, what is happening, Srila Prabhupada, when he's explaining is, he's saying we should accept the authority of the Srimad Bhagavatam. That cows are the source of great dharma, of virtue, of prosperity. Now all this is true. But this assumes that people are ready to accept the authority of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, just to summarize this point, there is age and there is authority. So which authority is accepted by which age? We consider, so pre-modern, who is authority? Religion. So Prabhupada is primarily drawing from that authority. And now, it's not that this authority is no longer important. It's not that sacred texts are no longer important today. They contain timeless wisdom. And they need to be accepted eventually by thoughtful seekers. But the overall social ethos today is not where these texts are the source of authority for majority people. Therefore, if we try to make our case using these texts, we will not be able to connect at all. Or if we use the ethical standards of this text, of these texts, and evaluate contemporary people and call them degraded, all that will happen is people will just think you are so indoctrinated. I don't care for you. So what happens is, pre-modern times religion was the authority. In modern times, science and rationality, There is authority. But in postmodern times, well, science has its importance, but it is not that important. Its primary authority is one's own experience. So one example of this is the popularity of yoga. Now, slowly in the last maybe 10 years or so, many scientific studies are being done about the benefits, the physical benefits primarily, of the practice of yoga. But yoga practice went far beyond, and millions of people practice yoga. According to some surveys, one out of every fourth person in America has had some contact with yoga. And one out of 10 people in America consider themselves serious yoga practitioners. Now, how did this happen? It is not that these people, they read the Vedas and we should practice yoga. No, that is not religious authority. There were not many scientific studies validating the benefits of yoga. But what happened was, they found experience. Hey, this helps me become fitter, this helps me become healthier, this improves my looks and health and fitness, and it also helps me calm my mind, at least to some extent. So people took it up. So it was based on experience. So similarly for us, if we want to connect with people today, in today's world, in this postmodern ethos, actually there is a great opportunity to connect with people and to explain cow care in a way that goes beyond condemnation. So broadly, we could say in today's world, there are, if you consider sattva rising, we may say today's world is filled with materialism and degradation. Well, true, but not necessarily entirely true. Because even in today's world, there are various areas in which sattva guna is rising. So, as I mentioned, one of them is yoga. We may say that people are doing yoga for just material purposes, and that is not the purpose of yoga. True, but at least people are, if they want to be healthier, instead of putting chemicals into their body, if they are adopting yogic practices, that is sattvic. So, the ends may not be sattvic right now, but at least the means are literally sattvic. So, yoga practice is one thing. Then another thing is environmentalism. A lot of awareness about how we are affecting our environment, how indiscriminate industrialization is likely to cause devastating and possibly irreversible consequences on the fragile ecosystem and the biosphere that we live in. So that's environmentalism. Third is mindfulness, where people are looking for mental health, but even people who are non-spiritual, many of them are quite hesitant about taking pills. Are there some other means? And mindfulness has become huge. I was in Silicon Valley in San Jose, and I was invited to speak in Salesforce. So it's one of the top companies, Fortune 500. So they have an entire floor dedicated for mindfulness meditation. So people during their office hours, not an entire floor, one section of a floor, where people, when they are feeling too stressed or they're not able to focus, during their office hours, they can come to the meditation room and they can just do some mindfulness. And their companies have paid seminars where they invite speakers to come and speak. And the last is what I mentioned, veganism. So these four are areas where there is a rise in sattva. And now cow care, if it is presented properly, actually there are a lot of people who can appreciate it. So veganism. Now the reasons why veganism is spreading are multiple reasons. One of them is, there is a great myth that there will be a protein deficiency and you cannot be healthy, you cannot be physically strong. But what has been found is vegetarian food is much healthier for people. And beyond that, there is the aspect. The health is, you could say, secondary, but the primary is the violence. As more and more people are becoming aware of how violent meat is, then people are becoming more and more aware. And they're becoming alert. No, I don't want to be a part of this. And then, of course, there is, again, environmentalism. This is where the two gel with each other, or they overlap. Intersectionality is a word sometimes used for this. That people are aware of the environment, they know that
meat is far more costly for the environment in terms of food and air, in terms of water and pollution and things like that. So I won't go into this. My point is this, that there is a significant opportunity even for people who have no religious inclinations for them to also start appreciating cow care. So there is a form of these four things, as I said, there is intersection of these. So one opportunity that is being tapped in the Western world, and slowly I think it will happen in India also, is that there, when people are depressed, there is a form of non-intrusive, non-invasive therapy that is called as equine therapy. Equine therapy means that a person is told, you go to a stable and take care of horses. And just spending time with the horses, brush them, not ride them, but just brush them, spend time with them. And they found that just doing this actually brings down people's depression. The idea is, when there's depression, you feel, I just don't want to do anything at all. Sometimes in spiritual life, we say desires are bad. Give up desires. Well, not exactly. Yes, we want to give up desires so that we rise. If there is sattva guna, sattva, rajas and tamas. There is goodness, passion, ignorance, and then there is shuddha sattva above this. So, the purpose is not so much to give up desires as to raise consciousness upwards. And this means we take up higher desires. If people simply give up desires, oh, this is materialistic, this is temporary, this is all. Simply give up desires, what happens is, no desires is a singular most important characteristic of depression. A person who is depressed, they have no desire even to get out of the bed. What is the point of getting out of the bed? What is the point of living? Of course, they'll get out of the bed to eat food and watch TV and play video games. But beyond that, why do anything else? So just demonizing desires can be damaging for people. So what happens is, when somebody is depressed, they go to a stable, they take care of horses, and they see, I can make a difference. This horse is reciprocating with me. And what happens is, they start feeling better. They feel that if I try to connect with humans, maybe humans will betray me. But animals won't betray me like that. So you taking this same point, now devotees are pioneering what is called as bovine therapy. Bovine, equine is the adjective for horses. Bovine is the adjective for cows. So another way it is called is cow cuddling. So cow care sounds, go seva sounds very old fashioned. But cow cuddling, oh, that's very cool. I want to go and cuddle cows. But essentially, what are you doing? We are actually doing the same thing. We're taking care of cows. And although this research is in the nascent stage, but a lot of people have reported that they feel so uplifted by being with cows. So this is a way where we can tap the contemporary ethos. And where we can actually present cow care. We don't have to present it, oh, you should take care of cows because Krishna loves cows. Okay. So Krishna loves cows, that's just your religious sectarian god. Why should I care? Well, yes, we want them to care. But how it happens, you know, when we want to connect with people, connection, there is, you could say that this one circle is another circle. So this is their felt needs. And then there are ultimate needs. So the ultimate need for every soul is to ultimately connect with the divine, love Krishna and attain Krishna. That is the ultimate need. So we could say here, the ultimate need is Krishna prema, love for Krishna. Now, immediate need may be pleasure, maybe relief, maybe just stress management. You could say stress relief, depression relief or something like that. So is there some place where these two can intersect? So connecting people means understanding what their immediate needs are and seeing where the immediate and the ultimate can connect, can overlap. So this is where bovine therapy or cow cuddling, this, if presented appropriately, can fall in this category. It's the overlapping of these two Venn diagrams. Now, going further, I'll move to the third point now. The second point was where to overlap. Where cow care overlaps with contemporary culture or it harmonizes. Now, where it goes against contemporary culture. There are several areas, but I'll go briefly over them. Somehow, the way things have been propagated in the West is that a lot of Vedic values, yogic values, a lot of Indic values have been adopted, but it is like, you know, I will use whatever word you can, Indic, Vedic, yogic values, Indic values in the West have been adopted, but if you see, the credit is not given to Vedic wisdom or Vedic culture. The credit is given often to, for example, in this particular case, it is given to Buddhism. So it's interesting in the West, most people think that yoga comes from Buddhism. They don't say yoga comes from Hinduism. And even the value of ahimsa, the value of non-violence, which is quite central to the ethos of veganism, they say that comes from Buddhism. And that doesn't come from Hinduism. And to make things worse, sometimes we as devotees, we say, the Bhagavad Gita is literal. Krishna actually told Arjuna to fight a war. Oh, then Krishna is a violent god. How can you talk about ahimsa if your central text is teaching ahimsa? Well, no, the Gita is not teaching ahimsa. In that particular context, the call for action for Arjuna was to fight. But the Gita's universal message is not to fight a war. It is to harmonize with the divine will. So the point I'm making is that somehow the way things have been presented or things have been comprehended is that the value of caring for animals, it arises from the value of non-violence. Or at least not just so much non-violence, as reverence for all life. And panditaha samadarshinaha. So, that is very much a Vedic value. And just because the Gita tells that Arjuna that you have to kill the opposing army, does not mean that the Gita is licensing indiscriminate killing or the Gita is licensing meat eating. Not at all. So the point is that these values are not seen as coming from the Vedic context. And so that's why the credit is not given. Yeah, India is a culture, India is a land where, you know, people worship strange shaped gods. There are snake charmers. Of course, now there are. India is a place of software engineers. India is a place of Bollywood. That's what. But it's not exactly seen positively too much. So what do we do? See, here what happens is if we say, oh, our tradition is, it talks about reverence for all life and we care for cows. But this doesn't work. Why? Because people, especially in the West, are quite, you could say, the default attitude is skepticism. Not cynicism, but skepticism. That is, if I tell you something, the first thing is, how could this be wrong? Is this really right? So we could say this is a key difference between the West and the East. If we consider there's authority and subordinate. So in the East, if we have authority and subordinate, the first attitude, the default attitude is faith. Yeah, okay, this person is in the position of authority, they must be knowing something. I have faith in them. But in the West, the first attitude is doubt. If an authority is saying this, they must have some agenda. They want to hold on to their power. And this value system that they are talking about is simply to control us. The default attitude is doubt. So what happens is, today, if we say we care for cows, well, for a skeptical mind, are you caring for cows because you are a virtuous person who cares for animals? Or is it you're caring for cows because your religion tells you to do so? And if your religion tells you to do so, that only shows how religious you are. That doesn't show how virtuous you are.
There's a difference between the two things. That cow care, what is the source of it? Is it your religion or is it your virtue? Now we may say religion is the source of virtue. Well, that is true, but that doesn't work so well. Just last month, Shyamanantar and I, we had taken about 30 Western people, new people, not even not devotees, so outsiders you can say, taken them on a tour of India. And one of the things that they expressed everywhere is the, wherever they went, the pitiable condition of dogs. And they said there's one woman, she had come, she is actually a part of a dog rescue team in, I think, in some part of America. So she just sent some pictures of how the dogs were lying on the streets. And she said, with sending those pictures on Insta or Facebook, she put that, and within 1 hour, she collected $400 to donate to the animal shelter to take care of dogs over here. Of dogs over here, sorry. So the point is, you say your philosophy teaches you to teach all living beings equally. But you care for cows, but you don't care for dogs. And what does that show? That shows, it's not that you're concerned about animals, you're concerned about your religion. And that only shows what a religious person you are. And religion is often associated with extremism or sentimentalism. And you'll say, yeah, it's just your religion. That is why, nowadays, again I said, like cow cuddling is much more cooler than go seva. So, goshala is a word, goshala is a word which can appeal to traditional audiences. But the word that appeals to contemporary audiences is animal shelter. Animal shelters are big and lot of people give a lot of funds for this. So the point again is that it's for each one of us to recognize who we are speaking to. Now, India's population is so large that there are a large number of people who are in the traditional audience also who are ready to become insiders. And most of what I spoke today will be completely irrelevant for them. You know, what is the Shastra in all this? You know, while not talking about Parikshit Maharaj and Shukdev Goswami and the pastime. Well, yeah, we can talk about that. But who is the audience? So, if the audience is those who are traditional, and as I said, there are a large number of people like that. Now, how many will remain after one or two generations? That is something which is open to question. I was in Florida and I was giving a talk to some Hindu kids, not devotee kids. Some devotee kids were also there. So I asked them, how many of you have heard of Narasimha? And one of them raised hands. And he was looking very proud. He says, wasn't he for the former Prime Minister of India? So he was actually proud of his general knowledge about India. But he had no idea about Narasimha as God, as an avatar of Vishnu. So maybe one or two generations later, this audience who are outsiders ready to become insiders, who are ready to accept traditional authorities will be not there at all. So at that time, the need for contemporary outreach will become even more. But the key point is, if we can learn to present things in a way that is intelligible, it is appealing. Who is the audience I'm speaking to? So this is the last point. That how do we present cow care? It is understand the audience. So who are we speaking to? When we understand whom we are speaking to, then actually we can connect with those people. It's like I said, in the pre-modern, for the pre-modern and the modern audiences. So the sources of authority, if we quote those sources of authority, we can connect with people. So for example, if somebody is a traditional audience, we quote a lot of Sanskrit shlokas. Oh, this person is so scholarly. This is such an important point. Shastra teaches it. For modern audiences, we quote a lot of scientific references. We can quote about how, you know, milk is so healthy. These are studies which show that milk is healthy, or these show that how cow products are of so much benefit economically, this, that. We can talk about scientific studies we can quote. But for a postmodern audience, if you quote too many scriptural verses, that actually backfires. Rather than saying that, this person knows so much scripture or so much scriptural backing is there for this point. I say, yeah, can't you think for yourself? No, are you just like a robot through which somebody else is speaking? You know, you have no thoughtfulness. You are just towing the party line. So for a postmodern audience, there has to be analysis with tangible benefits, the experiential benefits. And this is where things can actually reach a large number of people. The same things which are actually same values, like Prabhupada would say, old wine in new bottle. The idea is that we need to understand the contemporary mind and present accordingly. Srila Prabhupada says in a letter that he wrote to the Bhaktivedanta Institute that we need to learn the art of approaching intelligent people and accept different perspectives and present Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada is not saying you teach them. He says we need to learn the art of how to reach out to them. And we need to, not that we have to say that every perspective is true, but why people have certain perspectives, if you understand that, then we will be able to connect with people and communicate this value. So today, cows are unfortunately subjected to so much persecution and pain and death. But that can change. That will change. But it is for us to make sure that we communicate in such a way that people feel inspired to bring about that change. We can bring about that change with our own finite resources. But if we can inspire others, then they can bring about this change at a far bigger scale and to a far greater effect. So to summarize, I discussed 4 points today. That the first point I talked about was, the broad topic was communicate, explaining cow care in the contemporary world. So we talked about 4 modalities. We talked about how to do outsider communication. That is the primary thing. Insider is like scriptural education directly. Insider, outsider is for the outreach. But outsider will determine our reputation. And for that, some amount of outsider-insider communication to be aware of how people think. So rather than condemnation, we focus on comprehension. What's happening? Why do people think and act the way they do? And then second point I talked about was where cow care and contemporary ethos, they overlap. That is the overlap part we discussed. So this is that veganism is one of the 4 things where veganism, environmentalism, mindfulness and yoga are 4 areas where sattva is rising. And if presented properly, the idea of cow care, like I talked about bovine therapy, cow cuddling, is appealing and it is growing, just like equine therapy is growing. Then where the two don't overlap, that we talked about is especially the primacy, is it given on religion or is it given on virtue? That are you taking care of cows because your religion tells you to do it or because you are a good person who is concerned about it? Well, it might be both. But what is the primary emphasis? So if we present cow care more as a part of the ethos of reverence for all life, and then not just because it's our religion that tells us to do it, then it's possible for us to also tap into this broader ethos. And the last point I discussed was about how it is important for us to understand our audience. So for a traditional audience, we use traditional sources. For a contemporary audience, we may need to use something that is intelligible to them, and that is how we can have effective outreach. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu, for a wonderful explanation about cow care. I just wanted to understand this principle, like... Of course, in India, we take care of cows mostly because of it is connected to Krishna and it is part of religion. When it comes to dogs, so there is a inherent, you can say, some distance we want to keep it. Because what we have been taught. So to get away with that thought, about just like you gave that example of that lady. So that is very difficult. When I find myself to connect with the dogs, it's very difficult. So then in that connection, the people generally, they identify, oh, this is a hypocrisy in the sense. You take care of cows and you don't take care of dogs. Of course, we have a, as a living entity, we take care of that aspect. But to, like, the way West take care of dogs, that, I don't think so. That may okay. come in our...
Yeah. See, the way we take care of cows through the Vedic values that we learn, there is some distance from the dogs. So what do we do about it? Or how can we take, how, what, can we care for dogs the way we care for cows? Well, you know, there is this ongoing discussion for which we don't really have a clear resolution. See, there is the spiritual and there is the cultural. So, the cultural is one way to the spiritual. But, is it the only way to the spiritual? So, for example, there is another culture. So, say, in this culture, let's not talk about cows and dogs right now. Let's talk about something else. Let's talk about, say, there's a particular culture in which a particular food item is liked. So, there's parathas. Food is a part of culture. There's another culture where pizzas are what are liked. So, does a person have to, if they want to become spiritual, can they become spiritual from their culture, or do they have to come here and they have to go here and become spiritual? I mean, does somebody likes pizzas? That's what they grew up eating. That's what is a delicacy for them. So, do they have to develop a taste for parathas? And then they grow spiritually? Well, broadly speaking, we say not necessary. We also say it's not necessary for somebody who has taken parathas has to start taking pizzas. This can also happen. That's not necessary. So the idea is, with respect to some aspects of culture, so when Srila Prabhupada had this discussion with Allen Ginsberg, when I started Western outreach, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj told me that every devotee who is going in the West should read that conversation between Prabhupada and Allen Ginsberg. There's a brief conversation in Hare Krishna Explosion, but actually it's much more detailed in the Veda base. So there Allen says that three things. He says, you know, you appear very Indian and you won't spread in the West. And he says because of the food, the dress, and the third thing he talks about is something like the language. So, and Prabhupada actually is very broad. He says, whatever food you want, you can offer. And you can wear any dress and you can grow in bhakti and language. He says, Prabhupada says, any names of God you can chant. So, the point is that Prabhupada is very inclusive. Now, some people say, that was for PR purposes. Well, Prabhupada didn't say that I was speaking this for PR purposes, for public relationships only. So, now, there are two broad approaches. That from whatever culture one has, one can rise towards spirituality. So, as I said, whatever food one takes care, whatever dress one wears. Now, dress, a person, our dress should not increase our bodily consciousness. So, basically, a person should dress modestly. Now, what does modest dress mean? Maybe different in different cultures. But basically, the idea is that dress should not be increasing our bodily consciousness. It should help us to, and it, our dress should not increase others' bodily consciousness. That is also there. The idea is that we address, so similarly with respect to language. It's only when I started going to the West that I realized how difficult of an obstacle language is for people. And the Mahamantra is not a problem. But write our names itself. As Shamantru and I were going together, we went West. Now just neither of them could, these people were there for us for 30 days, they just couldn't pronounce our names. So, eventually they're telling you, that we refer to you as the short monk and the tall monk. That's how they're referring to us. And finally, one of the women, she said, last day when we were leaving, she said that, you know, that Chaitanya. I says, how did you get my name? She said, finally, she said, I just thought of Tanya taking chai. So, it's very difficult for people to sometimes connect with certain aspects of our culture. So, now, having said this, this is the spiritual level, this is the cultural level. So now, cows, where do they fall? Is it cultural or is it spiritual? That's a difficult question. we can say that it is clearly spiritual because Krishna loves cows. That is definitely true. Nobody is denying that. But does that mean that a person who is born here has to love cows in order to love Krishna? Well, we say yes. Well, really? Then does a person who has to love Krishna has to love flute also? Does a person who has to love Krishna has to start wearing peacock feather or love peacocks? And we say, no, cows have to be taken care of because that's a part of our culture. True. Agreed. No doubt about it. Because it's not just that these are not ornaments like peacock feather or flute. It's like an ornament. But cow care is a part of our value. So we could say that cow care is not just the Indian culture. It is also spiritual culture. And that's why it has to be taken care of. And that's why anybody who wants to love Krishna has to some extent at least develop care for cows. They may not become dedicate their life to that. But some amount of appreciation has to be developed. Now the other way if we consider, should that now caring for dogs is a huge part of Western culture. And we could go into various reasons for that. One of the things is that Western culture is extremely lonely. And dogs and cats are, Radhishyamprabhu wrote a book called Your Best Friend. So when he was presenting that book to the West, the first thing that several Western viewers says, most people will think this refers to a dog. It's a book about dog and dog care. It is more about, it is a Paramatma, how is your best friend, Surudam Sarvabhutara. But it's very different. So what do we do? Well, if we want to do Western outreach, or if we want to reach our Western audiences, we may have to overcome some of our inhibitions. Now, does that mean that we will have dog care? We as a movement will start establishing dog care centers? No, we don't have to do that. But that aversion towards dogs that is there, that can be avoided. And dogs are known to have therapy purposes. People who have, they get fits. Now, they are therapy dogs. They help people. I know one senior Prabhupada disciple who constantly has a dog with him. And not because he loves that dog. Of course, he's affectionate toward the dog. But the idea is that he gets some fits. And these dogs are trained that whenever they sense a person getting a fit, then that dog goes behind that person and cushions the fall. And then when the dog starts barking, that dog has like special kind of belt around its neck. And whenever that dog starts barking people around nearby CNA, they immediately call 911. They call the ambulance. He said, this dog has saved my life twice. But if it's so, the dogs have multiple purposes. So if we just connect with people who are connected with dogs and understand why they appreciate them so much, then some of our instinctive, if not aversion, apathy that is there, that can decrease. Is it that something which everyone has to do? Not necessarily. But especially, again, as it depends on the audience. If you are trying to reach out to certain people, if we have certain centers which are meant to reach out to certain people, then in those centers, if most of the people over there have apathy towards dogs, then that's going to be a problem. So I would say that this just is developed by connection. You connect, I said, you know, outsider, insider, that kind of communication. Okay, why are people so much in love with dogs? Well, if you try to understand that, what a dog means for people's life, you know. There's one car bumper sticker I saw. The more I get to know people, the more I love my dog. Because people are untrustworthy, people betray, but my dog is always with me. Now, that's an unfortunate state of affairs today. Now, we don't want that state of affairs. We would much rather that people develop more principles, people become more sattva, and people become more trustworthy. But before that change happens, in the process, what are people going to do? So if we understand, then I think it's possible to overcome that distancing that we may want to keep from dogs. Now, does that mean that sometimes there can be too much distancing, there can be too much closeness also. Like people sleep with their dog, have the dog on their bed, and you know, there is one devotee who was a psychotherapist, and he found it, he's earning money, but is a little competitive. And then he specialized, there's a field called dog therapy. Now there is yoga and there is something called doga. Doga is a specialized form of yoga which you do with your dog. And this devotee said, I'm not a yoga teacher, I'm a doga teacher. Because there's a niche, He's actually earning a lot through that. And he says, by that, I don't have to worry much about the competition and I can focus on my bhakti. So I would say that if we connect with people who are in those in that particular area, we can comprehend much more. Thank you. Your question is for. Can you speak? I'll repeat the question.
What kind of karmic reaction are given when we are involved in selling meat? So,
what kind of karmic reaction is involved when we are involved in selling meat? See, first thing is Krishna says gahana karma no gati. Karma is complex. And we are not the super soul, so we don't know exactly in what context a person is doing that. And context means, see, there is, broadly the Mahabharata says, there is, if you want to understand whether action is right or wrong, which is basically understand. So, karma, if you want to understand what is right and wrong, there is the content of the action. What is the action being done? Then before the content comes the intent. Why is the action being done? And after the content comes the consequence. What is the result of the action? So all these three are to be considered when determining what is the right or wrong action. So from the content point of view, any action that in which we cause pain to others, that is negative karma. And there will be a consequence of that. So now, and there will be a karmic reaction for that. Now what is the intent? Now somebody may do it because it's just their livelihood and they never thought about it much before. That's what our family was doing. That's what the job I got. I'm doing that. Okay. That's one way of looking at it. Now if we compare that with what Narad Muni told Mrugari. Mrugari actually half killed animals and he delighted in the pain that he was inflicting on that. And he said, that's terrible. He's killed them fully. He didn't tell them stop killing. He says, kill them fully. Why? Don't let your intent be to enjoy their pain. Pain is being caused. But don't enjoy that pain. So, we consider the consequence. Consequences, if a person is in a particular profession, but nowadays, even at least with respect to meat, slaughterhouses, there is at least some awareness of the kind of regulations that are there. In the West, this is because of the influence of veganism, this is becoming more and more aware. So if animals are killed, or they could be killed in extremely painful ways, they could be killed in painless ways. Painless ways means, or they could be given some anesthesia or some painkiller before they are slaughtered. Or they could be killed with blunt weapons or blunt instruments where the killing takes a lot of time. They could be killed with sharper weapons where the killing is instantaneous. So, there are ethical considerations over there. Now, we may say this whole industry is barbaric. That is true. But within that also, there can be attempts to lessen the pain. So, in general, the principle is, when we cause pain, there is a reaction. And the reaction is, we will get pain, if we are causing pain. So, now somebody may say that, I am not actually killing the animal. I am simply selling the meat. Well, yes, true. So, it's not that a person is directly killing the animal, but we have to understand that karma is a chain. Now, why would somebody kill animals if there was nobody selling the animals, selling the meat? So, it's everybody who is involved in that is implicated. But the degree of the implication, that will depend on factors. You know, is a person selling meat, is that their only thing that they are selling? Is that one of the things that they are selling? Is it something they are selling but they want to stop selling it in future? Is it something they are selling and they want to expand it in future? Is it so? We have to consider all these factors. And rather than simply saying, you know, this will give you terrible karma, you are doing this and that, you have to stop it. Well, that's one way of communicating. But help people understand and then help people deal with the situation. Okay, what can one do? Can one move towards some other profession? What will be required for moving towards some other profession? So when one considers that, then we are not just condemning, but we are actually assisting people in raising their consciousness. Okay. So thank you very much. Gantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaura Bhaktavinda ki. Gaura Prabhupada ki.